Kaya Wonju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Akmal Sally is one of Australia's finest stand-up comedians, having spent decades keeping Australians entertained through his observant and enjoyable brand of comedy. When not on stage, Akmal can be heard on screen in an array of kids' animated shows like The Wild Adventures of Blinky Bill, Tracy McBean, and the superb animated series 100% Wolf. The sequel to the 2020 werewolf hit 200% Wolf hit cinemas on the 8th of August. And as I continue my championing of the film with interviews with director Alexis Staderman and lead voice actor Eli Swindles, I was able to also have a chat with Akmal about his work on the film and what it means to be able to improvise as a voice actor. I even managed to slip in a question about reflecting on his 2003 comedy You Can't Stop the Murders, which Akmal co-wrote and starred in, and as you'll hear, he's a little bit surprised that anybody actually remembers the film. 200% Wolf is in cinemas on the 8th of August all around Australia, and I urge everyone to head along and check out this absolutely delightful and visually spectacular animated extravaganza. I know that there is a lot of focus on the DreamWorks and Pixar films of the world, and yes, they are good, for sure, but there's something about homegrown animation that I think is really, really special. And 200% Wolf is one of those films. It is a visual delight. I absolutely had a lot of fun with this film, especially, as you'll hear, one of the repeated questions which I've asked both Alexis, Eli, and now Akmal is about the importance of fart jokes. That's where this interview starts. But we'll get to that in a second. First of all, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Curb Podcast and also keeping The Curb independent and ad-free. To help do that, visit patreon.com/thecurbau to show your support from as little as $1 a month. If you don't want to do that, that's perfectly fine, but please head over to thecurb.com.au and check out other reviews, interviews, and articles that we've got on there. In the meantime, let's have a listen to the trailer for 200% Wolf, once again out in cinemas on the 8th of August.
Catastrophe was averted tonight.
Come on!
By what appears to be a tiny pink poodle.
I want the pack to take me seriously.
Hello?
Hello.
What are you doing?
Summoning the spirit.
Freddy?
I'm a wolf! Look at these guns! You're a baby moon spirit?
Oh, boy.
You summoned the spirit?
Ta-da!
Spirits aren't made for this world. Mupu's inner light will fade out.
What have I done?
Nice one, big bad wolf.
We need to save Mupu.
Next stop, the Great Mist!
Ooh, visitors.
I hate visitors.
Ladies and gentlemen, Armageddon's upon us.
Save the baby!
Just be you. Who doesn't love that guy?
Whoa. Did we just get mooned by a moon spirit?
Nice one, Mupu.
I really love this film. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I've had a chat to both Eli and Alexis around when Sydney Film Festival screened it, and it was just an absolute delight to be able to talk to them. Oddly, the thing that we talked about quite a bit was the importance of a really good fart on film. So I kind of want to start off talking about that if possible, because
yes.
200% Wolf does have a lot of really good farts in it. And I'm curious for you, as somebody who's been around comedy for so long, how important is a good fart joke?
It's very crucial, especially at that age group that is the comic genius, you know, like, and that age group that watch that sort of relate to that film, they know the difference between just an ordinary fart and a very funny fart. You know, as you get older, you can't hear the difference, you know. It's like hearing different tones. You can't hear tones anymore as you get older. Same thing. It's
yeah. Does that lean into your character then? You know, who's kind of this old doddery creature who is both wise and a little bit, you know, the world is a bit difficult at times too, even though he's quite a wise creature.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like they based it on me in real life. I'm wise, but very confused as well, and dottery, and I love a good fart joke. So they just went, and he's a Scottish Terrier with an Egyptian accent. That's never happened before in animation. First time ever. Yeah, yeah.
So with that in mind, how did you build the character of Hamish? And you know, was there ever a desire to kind of give him more of an accent or anything like that?
Well, you know, this is the thing. Like, people confuse me for a voice actor. You know, I'm a comedian, and they always ask me to do this. And I've done a lot of these. I've been a lizard. I've been a feral cat. I've been a thug. And they all sound exactly like me. They sound exactly like me. And so I, you know, as opposed to the actors you spoke to who are real voice actors, I just come in and just muck around, and they seem to like my voice for some reason. I think my personality and my voice naturally lend itself to a cartoon, because people think I'm a cartoon character anyway. So it's not a huge stretch. So basically, it's so much fun. I just walk in, and I don't know if people know this, but you actually read the script, you record the voices, and then you do the animation, which gives you a lot of freedom to just muck around and improvise. And, you know, the challenge is to try and make what's on the page funnier. And occasionally it works, and other times they go, oh, no, we need you to write, you know, we need you actually say those lines, because it's really important for the story. And they say, oh, I haven't read the story, or maybe you should have. but it's, that's, for me, I think it's different for me than any other voice actors, because I'm just, it's an extension of myself. And that's when the fun starts. Yeah, it's the most amazing fun you can have, because you become like a child. You become, it's the only innocent thing that I do that doesn't require a lot of I just don't think too much about it. Just as you know, with my life, I don't think too much about it. I improvise my life.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously you've got the script there. You know, how many takes do you kind of do to riff off what's on the page? And is there a point where, as you're saying, like, we need you to read what's on the script, or, you know, what you've said is enough? How do you know when what you've said is...
Well, you've got a director who's sitting on the other end of the, you know, he's in the soundproof room, and I'll do something and I'll look out, and they'll be talking to each other. And we go, oh, no. Sometimes you can tell, you know, I'm annoying them now. I'm talking too much. Or they think, maybe we should have got someone else, because I don't lip read. And then they'll say, oh, you know, they'll come in and say, oh, that was really good. Or, no, can you cut that shorter? Or can you do that again, but with more emphasis on that word or whatever? So I take the cue from the director, Alex, who is an amazing he was just so in tune with what was going on. And that made it easy for me, because they were very clear about what they wanted. But any contribution I made, they were happy to kind of, oh, yeah, we'll go with that. That's fun. Yeah, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, as I was saying, like, the film is absolute delight. I loved the first one and really loved this one. I thought it was both visually and narratively exciting. But I kind of want to take a step back a little bit as well, because it's been almost like 20 years, I guess, is probably it, for maybe longer. You Can't Stop the Murders was 21 years ago. So I'm curious if you can talk about, like, the journey from, you know, both writing and starring in that to now doing animated films. Have you ever thought about that step of going from
I'm surprised. I'm surprised you actually have heard of that film. no one's ever asked me about it, ever. It's like one of those mysterious things. Did it really happen, or did they do that, or was that a dream? No, it was a very different process, you know. Like, I was much younger, and I was working with a team, you know, a couple of other guys who I knew very well, and we're very close, and that makes it a lot easier, because it keeps that energy going, you know. Just when you feel a bit low, or you think, oh, this isn't working, whatever, someone else will come in with another idea and keeps the flame going, you know. So that's a very different thing. It's a collaboration. You have to kind of adjust to what others are doing, and you know, and it's really hard to find people that are on the same wavelength I've been sort of struggling to find that ever since. It's very, very difficult. And when it's not right, you can tell straight away. And with us, it was really, it just gelled, you know, it just clicked. And it was probably the most fun I've ever had. It took us a year to write and another 6 months to film it. And no one watched it. It was well worth that effort, huh? No one watched it.
Well, I mean, like I can say I was one of the few who paid to see it in the cinema, and I've got it on DVD as well. Yeah. So I do.
Oh, really? Well,
I quite enjoy it.
Well, you know, it's all in the timing, they say. And yeah, this is we worked really hard on this film, and the night it opened, America declared war on Iraq. So everyone was at home watching the Iraq War, and the film was called You Can't Stop the Murders, starring Akmal Sali, is an Arabic name. It was just, the timing was all out, you know?
Yeah. Well, you were talking about having, you know, collaborative approach and stuff like that on that film, and I'm curious then how that kind of collaborative approach works for a film like 200% Wolf, because I know usually for voice actors, you're in the booth by yourself. You're not reacting to people. So how does that work?
Well, it basically is as different as you can get, because you are by yourself and you're reading your lines. You don't know the other actors. You're not interacting with the other actors. You're not bouncing off them. I mean, ideally, that would be better, I think, you know, because I've done both. I was in a show called Tracy McBean, and you'd have like 12 actors in the one room. And that was great fun, because you can really improvise and try different things and throw things at different characters and see how they respond. But this is you're completely alone. It's between you and the director, and they have a clear vision of what they want. And so I'll throw something, and they've got the much clearer idea of the big picture, and I don't. I've just got my few lines here and there, and you're in a dark room and you just wonder what's going on. And then someone brings you water because your throat starts to hurt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's got to be difficult to just kind of be talking so much as well. Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah.
But the other thing, the difference is, like, we shot that film, You Can't Stop the Murders, on film. It's like 35mm, which no one does anymore. But and so you got like a maximum of 3 takes. And if you don't get it right in the 3 takes, we have to move on, because we had a very limited budget, you see. And I mean, even if you're shooting it on digital, the time it takes, all the crew that are employed, and the money that's being siphoned as you muck up, or with this, you can muck around as much as you want, because it's unlimited. You know, you can just, you know, there's that pressure doesn't exist. Because you can have as many takes as you want, and they'll go, no worries, we got it now, but we can maybe try it differently. We might be able to improve on that. With the film, it was like, a lot more pressure to just get it right and stick to the script. Yeah.
Yeah, well, definitely. So with that in mind, like 200% Wolf, I assume you've seen it, and then were there any kind of surprises of, oh, they put that line in, or, you know, I wish they put this line in, or anything like that?
Oh, no. No, I have no memory of what I said or did at all. And in fact, when I watched it, I thought, oh, is that, that's what the story's about. Oh, that's great. I didn't even know. So, no, I don't. Because it's so out of context in a lot of ways. When you're recording it, you don't know what you're saying or what the context is, because they don't really give you the whole script. They just give you bits and pieces, and you try and sort of, and they tell you roughly what it's about. And then you sort of do that, and then you watch it and you're surprised. Oh, you go, oh, that's what that line meant. Maybe I should have delivered it differently.
Yeah. With that in mind as well, like, obviously you're well known as a comedian, stand-up comedian, who's, you know, the audience is mostly adults. And I'm curious then, for the first film, whether there's been any kids who have kind of grown up and enjoying the film and hearing your work, and then have kind of transitioned over to being a fan of you as a stand-up comedian. Have you encountered anybody who's enjoyed, you know, made that move?
Not that I can remember, but I have had a lot of people come up to me. This is how old I'm getting, right? They go, oh, Akmal, how are you going? My grandfather loves you. He's a big fan of yours. or I used to watch you when I came home from primary school, you know, and you go, oh my God, I'm getting old. You know, I'm just trying to, occasionally, like, I was in a show called Tracy McBean, which was quite successful. And so occasionally I'll get people say in their early 20s saying, oh, man, I saw you on Tracy McBean. I really like that. And I go, wow, how old were you? I was 7. Oh, my God.
But it's got to be pretty exciting to know that somebody has, you know, you've been part of somebody's life and, you know, they've been following you and have enjoyed the work that you've done, and it's shaped who they are as people.
But like you say, it's such a different world. The stand-up world is so far away from the children's animation world. So if someone sees me on Tracy McBean and then sees me doing stand-up, I mean, they're just two different beings, different personalities, different people altogether, you know. It's a strange thing.
Yeah. Well, now the film's heading out to the world as we wrap up our discussion now. I'm curious how you feel about it. What's your hopes and your dreams for audiences heading along to go and see the film as it opens?
Well, I'd like to, you know, look, you know, if the film is as enjoyable for people as the fun that I had doing it, because I really, you know, I'm quite lazy by nature and I'm not a hardworking person. I'm really lazy. But this was a project that I looked forward to. So every day I'd go in and I'd go, oh, man, I got an idea for this line or whatever. And because they were so receptive to experiments and improvisation and stuff, it was really easy to do. So if the amount of fun I had is carried over to the fun that people have watching it, then I think I will be satisfied with that. And I think they will. I think they're really – there's a lot of fun in there. There's a lot of – laughs. We had a lot of laughs, and I know I spoke to the other actors who had a lot of laughs doing it as well, and that's always a good sign, you know, because people watch shows and they click into the vibe, you know, like they say, I'm not sure why, but I really love this, I got a good feeling for this, because subconsciously they pick up on the fun that the people had doing it, I think, and that goes for anything.
Well, definitely. Well, I had a huge amount of fun. I've seen it twice now and absolutely loved it. So you're on to a winner. So thank you so much, Akmal, for your time and for the great performance as Hamish as well. It's been a delight seeing you do it for both of the films.
Thank you so much for showing so much interest in an animation film. I'm really impressed by your enthusiasm for it. It's rare.
Oh, well, I mean, Australian animation is a bit of a rarity, as you know. So it's always a delight when we both, you know, make it and make it really good as well. So I've got to support it however
Thank
I
you.
Can. Yeah.
Like yes, I agree.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very mate. Much. Have a good day.
Have a good day. Bye. Bye.
Once again, thank you for listening to this episode of The Curb Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please head over to thecurb.com.au to listen to more episodes. And please consider supporting us on Patreon, where you can keep The Curb independent from as little as $1 a month, patreon.com/thecurbau. Thank you again, and I'll see you on the next one.